The suicide rate in central Wisconsin is at an all-time high. I'm Glenn Moberg. This Thursday on Route 51, we'll try to get some answers from suicide prevention specialists and survivors, Thursday at 5 on the Ideas Network.
The statistics really are alarming. The last year for which we have them, 2008, 737 Wisconsin residents took their own lives. It's the highest level in decades. That same year in Marathon County alone, 24 people committed suicide, and that was a record. We have a great panel for a very touchy subject. Dr. Edward Krall is a psychiatrist and the medical director of risk assessment for the Marshfield Clinic. We also have Debbie Trader, suicide prevention coordinator for Mental Health America, Wisconsin, and Dr. Henry Kanamoto, a suicide survivor and also a facilitator for the Survivors of Suicide Support Group. If you'd like to join us, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742.
Support for NPR comes from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org.
Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Welcome to Route 51, regional talk radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today on Route 51, our travels take us to the dark side, to a place that isn't mentioned in polite company and is all but ignored by the news media. If you look at the obituary pages of your local newspaper, you may see people who appear to have died too young or people who should have had their whole lives before them with no explanation in the fine print at the bottom of the page. All too often, these deaths are the result of suicide. The end for those who, in those famous words, lead lives of quiet desperation. And it is an end that is happening all too frequently in central Wisconsin and across our state. A study last week by the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism in conjunction with Wisconsin Public Radio, Wisconsin Public TV, and the UW-Madison School of Journalism showed an alarming increase in the suicide rate. In the year 2008, the last year for which we have statistics, 737 Wisconsin residents took their own lives, the highest level in decades. That same year, in Marathon County alone, 24 people made the decision to kill themselves. The suicide rate in Wisconsin is higher than in neighboring states and is now a greater cause of death than auto accidents and both breast and prostate cancer. Suicide crisis centers are also reporting an increase in the volume of calls. To get a handle on this problem and to help us look for solutions, we've got a great panel this afternoon. Here in our studio, we have Debbie Trader, Suicide Prevention Coordinator for Mental Health America, Wisconsin. Also, Dr. Henry Kanamoto, a suicide survivor, retired physician, and facilitator for the Survivors of Suicide Support Group. And joining us by telephone, Dr. Edward Krall, a psychiatrist who is the medical director of risk management for the Marshfield Clinic and also an assistant medical director for Security Health Plan of Wisconsin. Dr. Krall is also scheduled to appear in Wausau tomorrow for the Making Parity Real Symposium. This is a symposium with the goal of getting better insurance coverage for mental health treatment. Now, this is a touchy subject, but it's a very important one, and we'd like to hear from you. Why do you think our suicide rate is so high in North Central Wisconsin? Do you think it can all be explained by the economy? Do you have friends or relatives who have committed suicide or contemplated doing so? Do you have personal experiences that you can share with us to help us understand this problem and help us work towards solutions? And finally, do you think that there is enough healthcare coverage for mental health problems available to the people who need it? You can give us a call if you're in the Wausau area at 261-6371. That's 261-6371. Or toll free anywhere you're listening at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And as we always do on this program, we're going to be informal. So Henry, Debbie, and Ed, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I'd like to just go around the table, and Debbie, we'll start with you. Your reaction to the statistics that I just read and your idea of why.
Well, having worked with suicide prevention for the last 10 years, I used to work with a behavioral health unit in Wausau. And so I had a lot of local information, but now working with Mental Health America Wisconsin, I've been all over the state. And I see a lot of different things. I see the economy. I see family farms that have gone under. I see a lot more pressure on young people to be the fastest, the best, the strongest, that perfectionism going on. I see people that their marriages, their families are falling apart, maybe because of the economy or other reasons. The one thing about suicide, it's never one thing that's going to make a person want to complete suicide. It's a conglomeration of all these different things that just keep piling up and piling up till they get to the point where they think that's the only solution they have left.
So maybe we shouldn't be looking for just one answer, but many answers that
definitely
compounded by a lot of situations that have gotten a lot worse for a lot of people just recently. Henry, your reaction to the statistics?
Well, it deeply saddens me. That's my first reaction. Debbie and I have been at this for a number of years, and I'm constantly amazed by how difficult a job it is to try to attack this problem. In addition to what Debbie stated, I think in Wisconsin we bear the special curse, I guess, of the three things that enter into our lives here in Wisconsin. One is the society that is heavily dependent upon alcohol, and alcohol is a depressant. Wisconsinites seem to love their alcohol, and University of Wisconsin is known as the premier party school of all the state universities. The other thing is the ready access to firearms in a rural society. And the third thing, I think, is the incidence of depression. And I think Dr. Kroll can talk to this, is a lack of access to psychiatric care. I see the other side as well. I see what happens to families who have had suicide. And when I talk to these families, it's remarkable to me how many of these people have actually sought care, and for one reason or another have not been able to access the care, or who have been repeatedly turned away. And to me, that's really a sad thing, because what Debbie and I try to do is to get people to recognize the signs of suicide and to get these people to seek care. And then we think our job is done. But often it
isn't.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think we have to follow through. And once we do get them to seek care, it's rather disturbing when they meet a door that's closed in their face. So I kind of like to see what Dr. Kroll has to say about that from his perspective.
Well, Ed Kroll, why don't we turn to you? You're a psychiatrist. You work with the Marshfield Clinic organization. Your reaction to these statistics?
Oh, I would echo what Debbie and Henry have said, and I believe that we're in a perfect storm right here, where there's increased need and decreased supply of services, as Henry alluded to. There's, because of the economy, people are stressed, but because of the economy, there's decreased state funding for local and county programs. When this results in resources being slashed, patients are then pushed to the private sector, which has also been affected by the economy. So private clinics are struggling to meet their costs, unable to absorb those most needy patients. There's decreased reimbursement for the most needy patients, and so they're not likely to expand those services. We have a dramatic shortage of providers, psychiatrists, and primary care providers in central Wisconsin, and so all of this leads to be a very difficult situation where patients in need are not able to get the help that they need.
Ed, you're involved in the Making Real Symposium, Making Parity Real Symposium, that takes place tomorrow. It's from 10 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon at North Central Technical College. Tell us about that and what you're trying to do in terms of addressing the lack of mental health coverage for people who need it.
I'm looking forward to this. This is a forum that's being held around the state. It's been held so far in Milwaukee and in Green Bay. This is being led by Representative Sandy Pasch, who authored the Wisconsin Parity Bill. Parity is a provision which seeks to ensure that mental health coverage is going to be the same as it is for other medical and surgical kinds of problems. Up till now, there's been separate and reduced coverage for psychiatric problems. Once we have parity has been something that's coming for a long time, and finally achieving this, I think, is a huge breakthrough. It's going to level the playing field. It means that people should have coverage who have insurance for treatment that perhaps would have been prohibitive to them before because of cost. And so Representative Pash is hoping to get support for this bill in Wisconsin. And then, however, once we have parity, the problem is going to be, how do we meet the need that's going to come from that? There probably will be an increased demand, and I think it's a credit to Representative Pash that she's traveling the state.
Yeah, she is from Milwaukee County, and the other people behind this this symposium, the Milwaukee Addiction Treatment Initiative and the Community Advocates Public Policy Institute, they're all based in the urban areas of southeastern Wisconsin. Why are they here in rural Wausau tomorrow?
Well, I think that's the very point. They're coming to ask what are our local needs, and they're going to be meeting with the local law enforcement and mental health providers and consumers to find out what our needs are here in central Wisconsin. And I think the fact that she's coming and asking and listening and then being willing to take this back to Madison to look at what are going to be the real barriers for improving access to care in this part of the state, because I think that's going to be the next issue after parity becomes real.
You're not only the medical director of risk management for the Marshfield Clinic, you're an assistant medical director for Security Health Plan of Wisconsin. Is it your impression that insurance companies are still fighting the idea of providing coverage for mental health?
I think, unfortunately, that is true. It's based on a lot of misunderstanding. It's based on dated concepts. I think for a long time, insurance and employers have felt that mental health problems are chronic and uncurable, or you're trying to deal with things that don't have an answer. You can't, if people are unhappy, you can't you're not going to be able to make them happy with treatment. But I think those are dated concepts, and hopefully those days are behind us now, because we have more understanding of mental health and the fact that it is a treatable condition, and we have better treatments available. And this wave of parity has gone across the country. 40 other states in the United States have passed some form of parity bill, and now in the fall, the federal government has passed a national parity bill. Representative Pash's bill is meant to fill in the gaps that the federal parity bill does not cover. But you're right. I think that there have been some reluctance to cover this, because they see this as an area that you're going to throw money at, and it's a black hole, and you're not going to see results, and there's no end. But the truth of the matter is that states where parity has been implemented, there's a minimal increase in premiums and in cost to employers, and in fact sometimes there's a rollback because we're treating conditions more effectively.
All three of you, Deb and Henry, do you think if we had more available treatment for mental health disorders, it might lower the suicide rate in our state?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But we also want to, we don't want to say that we think it's only the experts that are going to prevent suicide. It's everyday people. It's you, me. It's friends, neighbors, coworkers. We're the ones that are going to prevent suicide by just being normal human beings and paying attention to each other and noticing things that are different. It's the everyday person that's going to take that person in trouble to an expert to get help. But we need those experts there and available. And right now, that's the hard part, finding somebody that's available. Now, Ed, you might have a better handle on the numbers, but the last thing I heard was some people, if they need to see a psychiatrist, it's at least a 6-week wait around here.
I think that's a conservative estimate. I think it can be worse for in some areas.
And by the time you decide that you have to see a psychiatrist, often it's a crisis. You need to see somebody right away. Henry, comment on what Ed Kroll was saying about parity and the need for more services available for the people who need them.
Well, I do think that there's a need because certainly, you know, if you've got a long wait to see a psychiatrist and you're in a crisis, a six-week wait is much too long. I'd like to add one more thing to the reason I think that suicide is such a difficult problem to tackle, and that's the public perception of mental disease as a personal weakness. You know, physicians talk about it as a disease, but the public thinks of mental disease as a weakness. And until we change that public perception, the people themselves that have depression as a disease will think of it as a weakness. And from my own perspective, my wife just totally refused to see a physician because she felt it was a personal weakness.
And you and your wife are both suicide survivors.
Well, there is some confusion. My current wife is a suicide survivor, and her husband refused to go to the hospital. My late wife, who took her own life, was in periods of depression, and even in her deepest depression, she would refuse to seek help for it.
Henry, hold those thoughts. We're going to take a quick break. I want to explore this in more detail, and I want to make sure that we have the time to do that. We're talking to Henry Kanamoto, Deb Trader, and Dr. Edward Kroll, all on the front lines in their own way of trying to prevent suicide. This is, we look at a staggering increase in the suicide statistics for central Wisconsin and across the entire state of Wisconsin. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you think you have something to add, if you know somebody who has gone through these kinds of problems, if you think you have an idea of how to approach them, give us a call at 261-6371, 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network, and we're talking about a difficult subject, a shocking increase in the suicide statistics. And our guests today, Debbie Trader and Henry Kanamoto, and also Dr. Ed Kroll, who are all working in their own ways on this problem. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Henry, when we took the break, you were talking about your own experience as a suicide survivor. And the situation that happened with both your former wife and your current wife, if you could just pick up the conversation.
Well, I think because of the public stigma about depression and mental health, people hesitate to seek medical care, even if they know that they are ill, because of their standing in the community. Or for one reason or another, it's not like any other disease. I think it has a lot to do with public prejudices about depression and mental illness. And so I think we have to work on a number of fronts. We need to increase public access to mental health care, but we also need to educate the public that mental disease is a disease. Is an illness and not a character flaw or a weakness.
We're going to go to the phones right now. Caller, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Could you give me your first name, please, and tell me where you're calling from?
Marlene, and I'm calling from Tomahawk area.
And your comments or your questions?
That I very much could walk off the edge of the earth many times, and I've been treated for depression, and I'm doing a lot better. And me too. I thought that everybody was weak that had it, because I had two sisters just like it. And as I got older, I wound up with a depression too.
Are you getting treatment right now for your problem?
Yes.
What advice would you give to people who are going through with what you're going through right now?
Oh, I would say just talk to a friend. And I'm fortunate enough, I had a friend that had suffered from depression, and actually one of my doctors suffered from depression, so they understand. I think you should have someone that knows what you're going through by having depression, you know, because you can say anything you want, and it just doesn't go away. You got to go and want to get well, so you go to the doctor and you get medicine.
Ed Kroll, any comments?
A couple of them. I think the comment that our caller is making, that it's helpful to know someone, or to know when you're going to a doctor that they understand depression.
Few doctors that just more or less said, well, I can't see why this medicine don't work. Well, it didn't work for me, you know.
Exactly. There's a statistic that says that a large percentage of people who attempt suicide see their primary care doctor in the previous 30 days.
Oh, yeah.
And there was another study that was done that said that doctors are taught when you have someone with depression, you should ask about depression and suicide and be sensitive to it. But what they found was that the doctors who were most sensitive to it had some experience with depression in their own lives or within their families. And so they are more sensitive, they are more aware, and I think part of the issue that Henry was talking about in terms of education, it's part of the education process, educating physicians and helping them understand what depression is like if they haven't experienced it, and being able to be more sensitive to their patients.
But my problem lies from being in the family. My brother committed suicide, and we didn't even know nothing about it. I'm from a family of nine. Out of the nine, one committed suicide, and three girls, including me, have medicine for depression. So it runs in families, too.
Oh, it does. And suicide is something that unfortunately does run in families. If there is a family member who attempted suicide, that puts everybody else at higher risk in the family. Not necessarily because they inherited, because it is something that is seen as perhaps that's the way out. And unfortunately, depression and suicide all too often is about feeling alone and feeling like you have no choices, and you end up resorting to things that perhaps are going to hurt you.
Well, all I can say is...
Deb Trader, if our caller or anyone else needs help, there's a website that they can go to get in touch
with
you.
I'm finally doing quite well. But it was no problem to walk off the edge of the earth for a while. And a lot of people I lost my husband about 3 years ago, too. So, it's been rough. And it's a combination of a lot of things, just like you said.
Marlene, is that your name?
Yes.
Do you and your sisters form a safety net for each other? A safety net. I think everybody needs somebody to talk to. And it seems to me that hearing your story, your sisters would be perfect.
My best friend, too. I confide in her constantly, and she knows when I'm up and down, And it sounds crazy when you say you're up and down, but finding the right medicine is great, but it takes quite a while to find that.
Oh, definitely. Uh-huh. And a lot of, and I'm sure Ed can attest to that, too, a lot of people have the assumption, and I notice it's not just with... psychotropic medicines, but it's almost like with pain medications and things like that. Right. I know of people that the doctor gives them a pill and they get it in their head, well, then if it's not working, it must be something I'm doing wrong, because the doctor's the expert. He knows what he's doing. They don't go back to the doctor and say, hey, I still feel bad or I feel worse. Mm-hmm. And the doctors aren't psychic. They're good, but they're not So it's just like any other medication. If it's not working, you need to talk to them and say, hey, I need some help here. It's not working quite right.
It's quite aggravating for me because I'm not on just one antidepressant.
Sure.
I'm on two antidepressants plus like a booster, you know, that
right.
Abilify.
Marlene, we're so happy that you're making progress and hang in there. And thank you for your comments.
Alrighty, thank you.
We have to take a quick break. We are talking about the alarming increase in the rate of suicide in central Wisconsin. 2616371 or 1-800-780-9742. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back after this short news break.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. Difficult subject today, but one we really need to talk about, the alarming increase in the statistics of suicide. In central Wisconsin, in the state of Wisconsin, and we presume all across the nation, given the current economic stress we're under and the fact that budgets to social service agencies are being cut. So there are more and more people in need and fewer places for them to go. Our guest today, Dr. Edward Krall, he's a psychiatrist with the Marshfield Clinic Behavioral Science Department. Dr. Henry Kanamoto, a suicide survivor, retired physician, and facilitator for the Survivors of Suicide Support Group. And also Debbie Trader, a suicide prevention coordinator for Mental Health America Wisconsin. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 2616371, 2616371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And Debbie, we were talking over the break that if anyone who is listening right now who is harboring suicidal thoughts or just feels that you're on the edge, you should not be calling this radio station right now. There is a hotline that you can call. It's 1-800-SUICIDE, 1-800-SUICIDE. And the people who call up are local people. They're in your community. And, Debbie, they're there to help.
Right. For example, the 800 suicide number in this area is answered at North Central Healthcare. And there's a one in Eau Claire, and there's all different areas in the state the calls are answered locally and local help can be given. You're not going to be calling some number out there in the world.
And if people want to get in touch with you, there's a website that they can get to. Why don't we get that out while we're at it?
Sure. Healthy Marathon County has a website, healthymarathoncounty.org. And if you clicked on the Suicide Prevention Task Force button, you will get information about the efforts in Marathon County. And my name, my phone number, and my email address are on there. And it's not just for Marathon County. I work all over the state of Wisconsin, but that's a great way to get in touch with you quickly.
And Henry Kanamoto, if people have a loved one, a family member, a friend who's committed suicide, they need help, how do they get in touch with your suicide support group?
They can call my home phone, which is area code 715-359-9818. If they forget that, we're on the United Way first call list. Or call any of the you can call the local hospitals and they will generally have my number as well. So you don't need to remember my number; you just need to know how to find it.
The suicide is something that's so tragic when it strikes anybody, but it is particularly tragic when it strikes young people. Henry, you've got some statistics that you brought with you.
I do. You mentioned at the top of the program that suicide outnumbers breast cancer and prostate cancer, but measured in another way in terms of years of life lost, suicide is a tremendous robber of years because it one of the peaks is in young people. It's the second leading killer in 2008 of males under the year of 44 years old, and in Marathon County. In 2009, nine out of 16 were under the age of 40, and in 2008, nine were under the age of 40, and two out of three people this year who have taken their lives are under the age of 40, and the youngest being 14 years old.
That happened in Marathon County.
Yes, we've had a 14-year-old take his life in Marathon County, and I like to compare. Suicide is a silent killer, because if we had this many people, for example, people of military age dying in Afghanistan or Iraq, the public would be in uproar. Another statistic I like to give out is that more people of military age during the Vietnam War years died of suicide than actually died in the Vietnam War. And so it's always been a silent killer.
And this is something that, as a journalist, I'm trained not to mention when somebody commits suicide. It's been a prohibition that I never really understood, but it's been one that's been in effect the entire time. You're not supposed to call attention to it and publicize it. So you have all of this happening and nobody talking about it. It's certainly not in our omnipresent 24-hour a day, 7-day a week media.
Some part of the reason for that is I'm going to say that the media really, for lack of a better way to put it, the air on the side of compassion, because of the stigma that's still out there with mental illness and especially suicide, it's they really are trying to protect the family. There's the guilt, there's some shame involved if a family member completes suicide, but it's the guilt feelings, I think, that a lot of family members don't want to face and don't want to have that thrown up to them very often. So I think the media, and in the past, another reason they had done it is that they're afraid of copycat, and they didn't want to and they don't want to glorify, with young people especially. If a person completes suicide, we very, very strongly advise that you don't do a memorial service, you know, or a big memorial at the school or anything like that. Rather, we prefer that something like that would stay a little bit more quiet, a little bit more reserved, just for the fact that if there's a student out there that is hurting and has self-esteem issues, things like that going on, and they see all the glory that this person who completed suicide did, they might, without thinking very clearly, say, wow, I can get some attention this way too and be better off at the same time. So they do want to try to scare off the idea of the copycat.
Ed Kroll is a psychiatrist. You know, why is this such a problem with young people?
I think that Debbie alluded to this at the beginning of the program, that I think right now there are more pressures on young people than there were before. I think the pressures to succeed, the pressures to be attractive, the pressures to be popular, and it doesn't all come together in adolescence for everybody. And when you feel like you don't fit in, that ostracism can be extremely difficult to carry, and people start to feel pretty desperate.
I'll tell you, it comes together for very few adolescents. It sure didn't come together for me when I was that age.
Right, for many of us.
And Henry, your statistics, again, indicate that one out of 20 high schoolers have suicidal thoughts or actually attempt suicide?
Well, there's a survey that the Centers for Disease Control does, and it's the Youth Behavioral Risk Survey, and they do this every year. Finally, the federal government has realized that suicide is a disease that needs to be tackled. And so one of the things that they do is they survey young people. And Wisconsin is one of the states that participates in this survey. It's called the Youth Behavioral Risk Survey. And in the state of Wisconsin, on the last survey year that I have data for, which is 2009, 6% of high school students, that's ages 9 to 12 are the grades that they survey, 6% of those students, or more than 1 in 20, have actually made a suicide attempt. And the data I have states that 1% of those, 1 out of 100, makes an attempt over over five times in the last year. So basically, in a normal classroom of 20 students, one of those students will, in the next year, try to take his or her life, which speaks to the magnitude of this problem in young people.
Are the symptoms of depression, the causes of it, the same all across the different age groups, whether you're young, middle-aged, or elderly, or is it different, do you have to treat different age groups differently? I'd like Ed to respond to that.
I think that depression takes different there are some symptoms that are in common, physical symptoms in terms of sleep disturbance, appetite disturbance, energy, concentration. Those things can be common across depression in different age groups, but I think each age group has its own individual stressors that need to be identified. One of the highest groups of suicide is elderly white males, and that's particularly sensitive to me because I am one of those, and it puts me in the risk group, and it seems that I've talked to groups about suicide, and I've asked, why do you think that the old white guys have more trouble? And they said, well, they tend to be more alone. They tend to have less connection with their community. They tend to have less connection with their families. And so and the same kind of thing, to look at the stressors for different age groups, when there's a loss of economic times like this, when there's a loss of a wage earner, that has a devastating effect on the family, and people start to feel like failures to their family, and they feel like failures to themselves, and so the dynamics in each of those age groups are different and need to be explored, and people need to feel like there are solutions for them.
You know, our identity is so tied up with the work we do. It's not just a paycheck, although that, of course, is certainly important. But the work we do is how we develop our personalities, our identity, our very sense of self-worth, who we are. And then when you don't have a paycheck and you're out of work for a long time and you can't afford your kids' education anymore and you're in danger of losing your home and you're having trouble making ends meet, really, in terms of the economic situation we're facing right now, it seems like it's kind of obvious why these statistics are the way they are.
I agree.
We're talking about suicide and an alarming increase in the statistics. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Our guest, Dr. Ed Krall, he is a psychiatrist with the Marshfield Clinic. And we have Debbie Trader, who works at Preventing Suicide, and also Dr. Henry Kanemoto, who's with a suicide support group, a support group for the survivors of suicide. Give us a call if you have something that you'd like to add to the conversation, if you think we're missing the boat in some way, or if you have some suggestions based on personal experience that might help other people. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back after this. We're talking about suicide statistics and suicide prevention, the causes of suicide. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Henry Kanemoto, you're a suicide survivor. How were you able to pull yourself back from the brink? And I'd like you to be as specific as you can. And what advice can you give other people who are in a similar situation?
Boy, I think everybody's situation is unique.
What happened to you?
I came home one night and found that my wife had taken her life. And that's when my world fell apart. And I went into a long spiral of depression. In fact, I became suicidal myself. And physicians seem to feel that they need to control everything in their environment. I mean, we're type A people, and I found that I had no control over my life at that point. And I was well enough at the beginning of this depression to know that I needed help. And so I sought psychiatric help. I was put on medication. And it took me about 18 months before I started to feel anything like a normal person. And it was a day-to-day struggle. And I think it was then that I found out that depression is not a weakness. It's something that you have very little control over. And some things in your life are so huge or so overwhelming that you need to seek help. And so I would say that if you're a suicide survivor, don't be ashamed to come to a support group. Don't be ashamed to seek professional help in any form that you can get it.
If I could speak to that briefly, the other hat I wear is working with our physician health program here in Marshfield. And for Henry, as a physician, to be able to say this on the air, I think takes a tremendous amount of courage. There is a code of silence among physicians, and everybody expects them to be strong and to be the healers. And oftentimes, they can be in a very alone place when it comes to looking for help, because it's hard to admit among your colleagues that you do need help, and you're wondering how that's going to be reflected in terms of how they see you and how they're going to work with you. And so that message needs to go out to physicians as well. Physicians do get depressed. They do need to get help, and the profession struggles to provide the kind of support that physicians need. And I just wanted to applaud Henry for being for having gotten to this point in his life where he's able to be able to say this kind of thing and to be able to reflect on it.
What's really weird is that the statistics show that people that work in high stress fields such as healthcare, physicians, emergency room people, technicians, people in law enforcement, the suicide rates are very high for them. And
yes.
So it's what's weird is to have that code of silence. We know it's there, but it's very strange to have that.
Oh, they also feel they have an obligation to be supermen at all times. Let's go back to the phones. We have Sharon in Minocqua. You're on Route 51. Hello, Sharon.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, I was listening to your program, and my father committed suicide when he was 75. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it fits into that category of, the white male, and always had to be in control. And I was actually thinking today, why did he commit suicide? And I was thinking it was because the males, sometimes they don't express their needs as much. I mean, traditionally, and maybe in that age group of his era, maybe now that's changed, but I think that men don't have that outlet for verbalization, and we never really knew he was having a problem, and, then he just was going to take control of things, and that's what he did.
So men don't like to talk about their problems, do they, Debbie?
No, when I go out and teach, lightly joke a little bit that there's a statistic that women will suffer from depression twice as much as men. And while that statistic is really high, 2-to-1 ratio like that, I honestly do believe, and Ed, I know you've said this at one of the talks I was at with you before, is that that ratio probably wouldn't be 2-to-1. Women will suffer from depression more than men just because of the way we're wired. But if men were more willing to talk about their feelings, more willing to say, yeah, I need help here, I'm not the big tough guy that my society tells me I need to be, that ratio would probably come down quite a bit.
Sharon,
exactly.
What did you have to do to get over that? Or have you even gotten over it yet?
Well, it's been 10 years, and I don't think you do get over it. I think there's those questions of, oh, I should have helped him more, And just looking back at it, thinking of the signs that I could have seen, but, I was younger, and, you're not sort of attuned to those things. You're in your own world of your family and everything. And so, as far as what I do to go get over it, I don't think you do get over it. Although I think that I kind of understand why he did it, because that's his personality, and he had some health issues, and he didn't want to live in a world where he couldn't be totally functioning the way he wanted to. So that's kind of how we all saw it. But I think there are other things involved, but I don't think you ever know. That's the problem.
Sharon, thanks so much for sharing your experience with us, and good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Deb, you have I hate to call it a slogan, but it's question, persuade, refer as a means of combating this. Can you explain that to us?
Well, question, persuade, refer, or QPR as it's known, is a grassroots training program to teach people how to notice the signs of suicide, risk factors, behavioral things that people may say or do that may get people, you know, another person thinking that, well, maybe they might be suicidal. We teach this class all over the area. Henry is a teacher of it. I'm a trainer and a master trainer. I teach other people to teach the program as well. But we go out and we teach it from eighth grade students on up to senior citizens. We teach it to physicians. I go into the schools and teach it. I work with the law enforcement. What the neat thing about QPR is that it's very common sense information. A lot of it people already know, but it's packaged to bring it to the forefront of their attention. And basically what it teaches us is that by just noticing things that are going on with people, by being compassionate human beings, we can see the signs of suicide in someone and hopefully get them some help. It's been a very successful program. Henry and I can both tell you stories about people that have taken the training and as soon as the very next day talk to somebody at work that they're concerned about, and sure enough, they've been thinking about suicide, and they talk it out and they get some help.
I guess the whole thing is don't keep it to yourself.
Right.
And if you see somebody who's having problems, help them get help?
Sure. What's the worst thing that can happen? When we do the QPR training, one of the things we teach people is how to ask the question, are you thinking about suicide? And one of the things I say first off right away is basically, what's the worst thing that can happen to you if you ask somebody they're thinking about suicide and the answer is, oh my gosh, no, I'm nowhere near that. The worst thing that can happen is, okay, they think you're a ghoul for maybe a minute, but you also opened a door that says, you know what, if I do start feeling this bad, here's somebody I can talk to.
Opening the door. Henry Kanamoto, we're down to our last few seconds here. If you could have just a few brief words.
I think the public needs to change their mind about suicide. The healthy public thinks about suicide as a problem. And for the person that is thinking about suicide, it's not a problem. It's a solution to their problems. And until we understand that we need to provide a better solution to these people, I think it's going to be a long road to try to solve this problem.
And Ed Kroll, very quickly.
I want to thank you for doing this program because I think it works in that process of raising awareness, and thank you for inviting me to be a part of it.
All right. We want to thank you for appearing with us. Ed Kroll, who is a psychiatrist with the Marshfield Clinic Behavioral Health Department. Also thanks to Debbie Trader, Suicide Prevention Coordinator for Mental Health America, Wisconsin, and Dr. Henry Kanamoto, a facilitator for the Survivors of Suicide Support Group. If you've got questions about suicide prevention, go to the Healthy Marathon County website, healthymarathoncounty.org, and click on the Suicide Prevention Task Force, which will show you how to get in touch with Deb. And if you are interested in contacting the Suicide Survivor Support Group, call Henry at 715-359-9818. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Mary Baldwin, and thanks as always to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. That's it for us today. Thanks for riding with us. Until next week, we're heading out of town.